Welcome to this week's edition of Dugout Dish Podcast. I'm Andy Kirikides, joined by my wonderful co-host per usual, Keith Glasser. Coach, how we doing?
Great, how are you?
Good. I love that hat. Big fan of the hat.
Oak Hill. PGA Championship of 2023.
Good luck.
We went last year. It was right here in good old Rochester, New York.
The light blue goes well with your complexion.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Nice. I feel like, sometimes people got to let you know that you kind of got it going on right now.
You went with the EMD hat tonight to make me feel better that I don't have an elite national hat still.
Jonathan, you're going to need to figure out.
You, Jonathan, I got you a background for the podcast and everything. I still don't have a hat. Unreal.
It's in the mail. Check's in the mail.
Yeah.
All right. This week, so the impetus for this particular topic is we've received some outreach from some parents of some younger fellas asking about things that they should be considering at an early stage for players that have a desire to play college baseball. And when I say early stages, we're talking 7th, 8th and freshman year of high school. All right. So we're talking pretty early on here. And I'm sure there's some people who are going to react like, oh, they don't need to be worrying about that stuff. And like, yeah, we're going to get into it. We're going to unpack this because I think there's quite a bit here when you start to talk about the current landscape of college baseball, the new timelines, the new recruiting rules. And I think this is less about deterring people from thinking about this and more about getting them to think about the right things here in the early stages and see if we can shed some light on some stuff here. I know we've got a few items we want to hit on, but I'm gonna kick it over to you to get this one started.
Whew. 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade. I think the biggest thing first and foremost is, going into high school, is making sure that we're staying on top of our academics. It's probably the biggest thing because you're able to actually, start off on a really strong foot to be able to make sure that you're doing what you need to be doing academically. We talk about it all the time on here. We talk about it with our clients and such, but it's so true that the better your grades are, the more doors that are going to be open and stay open to you in the recruiting process. One of the easiest things to do when I was coaching at RPI was just to show up and see the grades and just start crossing guys off because they can't get into school. It makes your job a little bit easier at some events, but ultimately maybe it does make your job a little bit harder because you do have to kind of recruit nationally to be able to fill, not only the academic, but also the financial piece of schools like that. So, I think the biggest thing, for younger guys and, 7th, 8th grade, we're talking about development and, picking the right summer team and the right organization and how are you going to be able to get yourself bigger, faster, stronger at, at your age group in a safe way to be able to make sure that you're, being able to develop in a safe way, and we'll kind of get into that as we go. But I think the easiest thing and the best place to start is just straight up academically, because there's a lot of people who get off to a bad foot and a bad start when they get into high school, and it can take a long time to recover. And obviously when people are seeing upward trajectory and such, those are things that admissions counselors do like to see. But if you could start as an A student and continue to be an A student throughout the course of your high school career, again, that opens more doors and it keeps them open longer, and it also commands more merit scholarship money and more academic money and things like that, that are going to be able to, potentially make the financial burden of college be less than it would if you weren't, if you don't pay attention to your academics and, you know, really it's just effort. You know, I get it. Like, I wasn't a great student. I wasn't the smartest person in the room, but, you know, just being able to kind of show up and put forth some effort to be able to knock down some A's and B's to make sure that you're going to be able to get into most colleges that could potentially recruit you or you want to go to.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's one of the more controllable things for players that go through this process, that you start well. And, you know, we've helped kids who haven't started as well. And it's a little bit of an uphill climb if you get a couple C's your freshman year. And there are some schools that's all it takes for you to not be admissible. And everybody is going to settle in as a student at a different rate. But I think it's important to have an emphasis on that and understand how it can open up doors for you, or at least keep doors open for you from an academic perspective. And, you know, you don't want to lose sight of that. Like, I understand that a lot of parents come at this from a place of just baseball. But as we've spoken about a lot, there's a lot more things that go into it than just the baseball portion of it. And yeah, I think that's the lowest hanging fruit of the thing that you can do to most benefit you in the long run, is make sure you get your high school career started off academically on the right foot. You know, be an A and a B student. And, you know, you can settle in and figure things out, but you got to put in the time, you got to put in the effort. Don't be afraid to ask for a tutor. Don't be afraid to put in some extra time on the weekends to make sure you get your grades right. But, you know, if you start off strong, it's a lot easier to maintain that than it is to try to make up for it later in your academic career when you really just don't have enough runway to get your GPA up. You know, if you go into your junior year and you're a 2.7 student, like, it's an uphill climb to get to a 3.2 or a 3.3. Like, you really got to knock it out of the park academically to do that. And if you can, you know, kind of raise your floor by doing well as a freshman, I think it's very advantageous. And to your point, it's, you know, there's a financial component to it as well. So that's definitely something I think is really important. The other piece for me is for how you select your travel ball stuff, right? There's a lot of organizations that are going to sell parents on chasing trophies and winning titles and wearing a certain jersey across the front of your uniform and being associated with a specific organization. And like, yeah, that's all fine and well. But the reality of it is that if you're in seventh to eighth grade freshman year, development has to be at the core of what you're focused on. So if you can find an organization that puts an emphasis on practice, and that you're not just going to travel every Thursday to play Friday, Saturday, Sunday for a whole summer, you know, and if you're from the state of New York and as a freshman, your tournament schedule is all down in Georgia and you got a place down in Texas and a place in, like, you're wasting money on what you deem are evaluation opportunities. But the reality is that nobody's recruiting kids at that age anymore. And I think it's a lot more valuable to make sure that your sons have an opportunity to play a lot. And one of the things that I think is a big gap in our travel ball, and it's not everybody, but I think in general, if you wanted to paint in some broad strokes here, is that I don't think a lot of organizations do enough work from a practice perspective, and they don't bring those kids together to actually run an on-field practice and have them take BP on the field and work on base running and work on cuts and relays and work on pickoffs and teach these kids the finer points of the game that are ultimately going to be really important for them when they get into college. And reps matter. And I know everybody's got a hidden coach and they got a thrown coach, but I think the on-field reps in a practice environment are really hard to quantify the importance of those at an early age, right? And the thing that I equate this to is that you see a lot of kids take off when they get to college. And I think a big reason for that is we practice a lot when you get into college. Your whole fall is practice, right? Yeah, you play a couple offsites game and you inter squad, like, don't get me wrong, but essentially that's practice. So you can pause an inter squad to coach up on a certain point, to coach up on a base running mistake, or highlight a base running play that was done really well. You can highlight that a ball went to the right part of the field when it was supposed to go there. It gives you a chance to really coach versus those game settings, a lot of times what happens is you huddle up and you're getting rushed off the field and you don't actually get to talk about or even really coach kids up on the finer points of the game that they really need to hear about when they're younger. So if you can find an organization, even if it's local, like those seventh, eighth, ninth grade years, it shouldn't be about exposure, right? It shouldn't be about trying to get a perfect game ranking. It shouldn't be about spending a ton of money to go to some showcase. It should really be about, can you get yourself in a position by the time you're 16 or 17 to be a recruitable athlete? Because the new timelines, coaches just aren't focused on kids that young anymore. And everybody develops at different rates. I mean, you're talking 13, 14, 15-year-old kids. I mean, there's a huge discrepancy in physicality at that age. And we all know the kid who's 13, who's the best player in the county. And by the time he's 17, you know, he's just another guy wearing a uniform. And you know, guys catch up to each other. And I think if you focus on the development piece and you find time to make sure that those practices are happening and you get involved with an organization that has a development mindset versus a trophy mindset, I think the long-term benefits of that are enormous. So from my perspective, I think that's a big piece of the puzzle for younger kids.
Yeah, the development piece at the younger age, I think, is the one of the biggest things that a lot of people miss on when it goes to choosing what organization, what team, who that you're going to play for. You know, there's a lot out there, and you know, everywhere there's plenty of different organizations that you can find that are going to be able to, you know, at least get you games and do that type of stuff. I think what separates, you know, a lot of the organizations where you can actually, you know, especially at a younger age, be able to get the most bang for your buck, because let's face it, you know, some of these things are rather expensive, you know, are the organizations where they're actually going to practice, you know, frequently. You know, it could be once a week, it could be twice a week, it could be three times a week. It doesn't really matter. You know, but I think that those are, you know, they're out there, you know, and kind of doing your due diligence and finding the organizations where they're going to have the same coaches at your son's games or daughter's games. They have the, you know, you're going to be able to practice just as much as you play. You know, that development piece is huge, because, you know, as college coaches, and you hit it on the head earlier, like, you spend the vast majority of the fall when you get to college baseball practicing. Like, you don't really play a whole hell of a lot. Like, yeah, you're going to play some inter squads, and you know, you usually have a day or so where you're going to play some outside competition in the fall, but the vast majority of it is spent learning, you know, the system, the program, and practicing baseball. And that's where a lot of people develop. You know, it's all well and great to go play, you know, 30, 40, 50 games, but you know, if you're not one of the people who are playing all the time and you're not practicing, like, you know, that's kind of a waste. Like, you should be able to be doing something where you're learning, you know, how to play the game of baseball over the course of the summer. You know, I hear some of these prices that get thrown out on these summer organizations, and it's like, yeah, we pay this, and that doesn't include, you know, the travel and the hotels and the gas and the food and all this other stuff. And oh, by the way, we only play games. We don't practice. Like, you know, you need to be doing something other than just straight up playing games. And yeah, that's a pretty big commitment. But if you're getting to the point where college baseball is something that you want to do, and you were doing this in the summer, then, you know, hey, you should be doing something where you're going to be practicing all the time. And, you know, I get it too. Like, everyone has their own hitting coach, and everyone has their own pitching coach, and everyone has this coach, and we have all these specialty people. And, you know, I think, you know, it's hard to kind of get everybody all on the same page, you know. And part of that, I think, also is that you have the specialty guys that are coaching I'll walk that back. We have all these guys that are working with players on hitting and pitching because the organizations aren't practicing. So, like, parents are going out and finding other people to be able to help their kids during the week because there is no practice. We don't practice at all. We only play games. You know, so I think, you know, it, if you can find an organization where, you know, you're actually going to be able to practice and play games and do some things and be able to develop and learn how to play baseball, you know, that's the ideal scenario, you know. And I think that it's something that people should be asking questions about. Like, if you're, you know, looking to go to, you know, switch organizations, or you're looking to get into the travel ball era, or whatever it is, or people approach you to come play for their team, like, ask these questions. Like, you know, aside from how much it is, like, okay, I'm going to pay $5,000 to do this. Like, what do I get? Like, you get a uniform and you play 40 games and that's it. We don't practice, you know, this, that, and the other. Like, you know, you want to make sure you're getting the most out of what it is that you're paying for. You know, and I think at the younger age, the biggest thing is being able to develop again, and be able to practice and not feel like you have to go hire multiple people to be able to help your son or daughter get better, because the organization that you're paying just doesn't practice and doesn't really do much. You know, so it's one of those things where, you know, that's one thing that I think as I've gotten on this side of things, and obviously, you know, you recognize it when you're coaching and you're recruiting and doing that stuff. But I think when I got on the other side of it and I'm not coaching anymore, like, it's an eye-opening thing to kind of hear the amount of money people pay for summer organizations. And, you know, the most you get out of it is just, 40 games on 25 dates. You know, there's no practice, there's nothing else. Like, get more out of it. And if you're a summer organization listener, like, I hope you think about this seriously and start trying to, you know, add in some more practice dates, do some other things where you can develop guys a little bit more. And I can promise you, you're probably going to win a couple more games, and you're going to get a lot more people that are happy with the product you're putting out on the field / providing to the families and the student athletes.
Yeah, to a certain extent, I think we kind of got it backwards a little bit with the youth, is that we're so focused on the skill acquisition that we lose sight of the gameplay. And I think the skill acquisition stuff, given what the baseball seasons are, like, if you want to improve your swing, you got plenty of time, November, December, January, February, to go in and get with the hitting coach and make some adjustments. Like, if you want to improve your delivery, you can do that. But I think those game and practice reps are really, really important. And I think for younger kids, I would err on the side of making sure that they practice more, right? If you had the choice between 2 games a week and 4 practices versus 4 games a week and 2 practices, I think for that younger age group, it's better to err on the side of practicing more. Cause I think you put them in an environment where it's okay for them to fail, then you can teach them. And you can coach them up on the finer points, and you can talk through different scenarios, and you can talk to them why a certain situation is good, or how they did something really well, or how they did something that they can improve on. And you get a chance to frame it from a place of improvement versus a place of criticism, where I think a lot of the teaching that happens during games can be very spur of the moment. It can be very reactionary. And a lot of times when you coach in that manner, emotion gets in the way of the message. And for young kids, like, if you're coaching these young kids, you have to expect them to mess up. And it's okay, because that's an opportunity to teach them how to do it better in the future. And I'm going to say this, and it's going to sound like I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth a little bit, because I'm not a participation trophy guy. Like, I don't think kids should get rewarded for just participating. But I also think that you have to take into consideration that winning isn't the only thing that matters when you're 7th and 8th grade. Like, when you're wearing a uniform and the other team's wearing another uniform, winning should be paramount. And you should teach those kids to compete. You should teach those kids to be great teammates. You should teach those kids to want to win, or maybe even more importantly, hate to lose. But you also have to take a step back and realize that they're 12 and 13 years old. And that if winning's the only thing that matters to you in that situation, you're probably missing the point. And to be super blunt, like, nobody cares what trophy you got when you were 12 years old, 5 years from now when you're getting recruited. Like, nobody cares that you won the Cooperstown Shamrock Classic in March, like, in shitty weather. Like, it just doesn't factor into the recruiting process. But those moments can shape a kid in terms of how they continue to progress. and I don't know, maybe it goes without saying, like, you need to make sure that your kid enjoys showing up and it's fun for him. Because I've watched it happen to guys who go and play professional baseball, where as soon as the fun gets sucked out of it, and it's not giggles and laughs. That's not the definition of fun when it comes to baseball. It's enjoying showing up and competing and being with your teammates and being with your coaches. As soon as that portion of it's gone, it's really hard to get a kid back in the mix. And having seen 21 and 22 year olds grapple with whether baseball is fun for them anymore, you got to make sure that your 12 and 13 year old really enjoys showing up to play, and that it's not a chore for them to go to practice or go to a game. I think that is really, really important, that young kids actively want to participate, and they're not doing it because the parents want to do it. They're doing it because they really want to be there, and it's something that they enjoy doing.
Yeah, I think that's at any age, really, right? Like, you know, you want to make sure that the kid is an active participant in what's going on here. And I think sometimes you can, you know, we have some people, and we've seen them as coaches and everything else, where, you know, mom and dad are living vicariously through junior. You know, and I think sometimes that, like, that's where you can get a little jammed up when you get to college, because that the ultimate goal was that, and then, you know, it kind of fizzles out from there sometimes. So, you know, I think being able to foster that, and I think it's important on both the family and I, you know, the coaching end of it as well, you know, and obviously where, like, being able to foster, you know, confidence in kids to be able to get them, you know, to stick in this game and stay for as long as, you know, we can keep them in this game. Like, this is a brutally tough game. And I think that sometimes, you know, especially at the youth levels, I've seen it with my own eyes recruiting. I've seen it, you know, I've heard it, and I've also heard it anecdotally, but, you know, you have people who scream and yell at 12 and 13 year olds for making physical errors and making mental errors. And, you know, that doesn't bode well for the long-term health of this game. If we're just going to scream and yell at 12 and 13 year olds or even 14 and 15 year olds for making errors, like, big leaguers make errors, man. Like, it happens in this game. And if you're just going to yell and scream at kids in the, you know, MLK Junior Classic game in late January or February, like, or the Valentine's Day Classic in February, like, no one's going to want to stick around. Like, it's not fun to be around a bunch of adults who scream at 12 and 13 year olds for making errors. Like, you know, is there a teaching point? Sure. But, like, if we're just going to scream and yell at kids and bench them because they made errors, like, yeah, man, that's not fun. My, what are we doing? They're 12 and 13. I've watched big leaguers make stupid errors and they don't get benched. Like, you're not coaching for your job. You're coaching 12 and 13 year old youth baseball. Coach them to get them better. But I do think that, you know, sometimes, like, you know, those are things that need to be factored in if you're, you know, at younger ages, to be able to make sure that kids want to stay in this game as long as they possibly can. You know, I think we lose kids, you know, to other sports relatively quickly sometimes, because it's, you know, this game is hard. This game can, you know, some people think it's boring. Like, this game is not boring. This is a cerebral game. There's a game within the game. There's a lot of things going on, you know, pre-pitch, post-pitch, you know, how are we trying to get guys out? How are we attacking guys? What are we doing that? Like, there's so much more that goes into it. And, you know, I think when you can't necessarily teach things that way, and you're not necessarily doing a good job of, you know, not only explaining it from a practice standpoint and then putting it, implementing it into your game settings, like, you know, it can get daunting on kids, and they want to leave because, you know, you can go play football and you have one job, and your job is to go hit this guy. Like, that seems a lot more fun than, you know, trying to move all over the place and make an error and I get yelled at. Or, you know, stand over here and we'll run the three-man weave and we'll just run up and down the court and throw the ball back to each other. You know, so I think, like, you know, those types of things you want to, I'm getting off topic a little bit here, but these are some of the things, like, questions that you want to ask and things you want to consider when we're talking about summer organizations and staying in this game and thinking of things that, you know, are going to be, that are important for you to be able to get your kid to develop over the course of the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier today and before we, you know, came on here, like, if you're a 2029, you're what, in eighth grade? like no one cares what you're doing until 2027. And it's 2024. So like follow my years and my logic here, but like until you're going into your junior year of high school, which would be the summer of 2027, like no one really cares what you're doing before that. So what you want to do is focus on the things that are going to be able to get you developed so that when you hit that summer in 2027, you know, you're giving yourself the best opportunity to be able to be successful. And, you know, pick up some phone calls on August 1st from some Division I schools. And if you don't, that's fine. Just keep developing because there's a ton of schools out there that are still going to be able to recruit you over the course of the next 12 to 18 months. You know, so I think it's things like that, that, you know, putting that into perspective, I think when we talk about stuff like this, like, you know, and same thing, if you're 2030, which is absolutely awful to even think about, Andy, we're getting up there in age, baby. You know, like no one cares what you're doing until the summer of 2028. You know, so it's like the early recruiting is not a thing anymore. So, you know, it's develop is really the main point that I think we're both trying to hammer here over the course of the next couple of years, where you can really, you know, hone in on the things that, you know, you need to get better at and keep your strengths sharp so that you know, when your time to kind of show up and show out happens, you're capable of doing that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you mentioned some other sports there, and I think it's worth talking about this. And I know we've talked about this in the past, and I will die on this hill that you do not need to specialize in baseball as a 12-year-old, as a 13-year-old, and even as a 14-year-old. I think developing athleticism doesn't happen naturally on a baseball field due to the nature of the game, despite the fact that athleticism is usually the biggest predictor of success in this sport. Skill acquisition in baseball is something that can be done. I don't want to say done easily, but there's a lot of ways that you can develop skill in baseball, right? Whether it's pitching, whether it's hitting, whether it's fielding, like there's a lot of ways to develop the skill that's required to do that. And that's great. But the athleticism is what separates guys. And I think for 12, 13, 14 year olds, if you play another sport right now, keep playing those other sports. There is no downfall, in my opinion, at all, because once again, the goal isn't to be the best 14-year-old baseball player. The goal is to put yourself in a position to be recruitable when your recruiting window opens. And athleticism is what the vast majority of these coaches are going to lean on, especially when they're evaluating an athlete early on in the process, is I need to know that you have the prerequisite athletic ability to play at my level, right? It's not just, can I field the ball clean and can I hit a ball successfully? Like there's athletic requirements to play at the college baseball level, either speed, size, arm speed, running speed. And I'd be remiss to not mention just the idea of being able to compete year round. Like if you only play a sport March through July, then you're not actually competing with any kind of consequences or any kind of a win and loss associated with it for the rest of the year, I think you're missing out on the ability to refine your ability to go and compete and be a part of something that's bigger than yourself. And I just think there's so much value in playing football and soccer and wrestling and basketball. And, you know, I don't think lacrosse is a huge crossover with baseball, but just play other sports. Enjoy it. I think it's really good for kids socially. I think it's really good for them mentally to take a break from the game of baseball. And I think probably most importantly, you're going to be doing things athletically that are not required of you on a baseball field, but will translate directly to your ability to play the game at a high level. And I think that is a little bit of a misnomer around the specialization that, like, if you just focus on baseball all the time, you're going to end up being a better baseball player, but you're going to be capped by your athleticism. And I think that once you get to 15 or 16, I think it's harder to tap in to athletic abilities. I think it's easier to get skill acquisition later in the process, and I think it's harder to develop the athletic component of it. So I'm a huge fan. For anybody who's listening, that if your kid plays another sport and they're 12, like, keep them in those sports. I think it's incredibly valuable for them in the long run. And if you get to 15 or 16 and you decide that you want to go all in with baseball, that's fine. I understand it, right? It's a competitive world. But at 13 or 14, to put down a basketball or stop playing soccer or not play football, I think it's a little bit short-sighted, and I'm not sure if people understand the value of playing those other sports.
No. I mean, we just, for our loyal listeners out there, I think 2 weeks ago we did a podcast just on multi-sport athletes.
Yeah, episode 71. Don't you worry, Andy. I got my episode list right in front of me.
But no, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, you know, if you're a younger kid, like, there's no reason to specialize super young. Does it work out for some people? Yeah, but I think, you know, being able to promote athleticism over the course of your, kind of formative years is something that's huge for student athletes to be able to really excel, whether it's going to be in baseball or in any other sport it is that they choose, right? You know, it's you pick up other skills in other sports that then allow you to be able to be more athletic on the baseball field. And we all know this when we went and recruited, like, you pay attention to how kids move, and the kids that move a lot better are generally the ones that you hone in on a little bit more, because, you know, they're more athletic, they're more fluid in their actions. There's things that they do that are different from everyone else, and those guys start to stand out a little bit more, you know, and there becomes an adjustability in what it is they can do, both athletically, defensively, and offensively. You know, there's some adjustability in their swing. There's a lot more that you can kind of work with, and you know, they're a little bit more malleable in being able to be coached and talk through things like, hey, what do you feel here? What do you feel there? You know, and being able to kind of get guys to feel things, I think, is a big thing in baseball. You hear it all the time. Like, what do you feel? What do you feel? What do you feel? And I think the more athletic you are, the better, the more feel you have to be able to understand how your body works and be able to make adjustments faster. And I think sometimes when you specialize in something, you're just getting told something over and over and over again, that's when it becomes a little bit harder to make those adjustments. That's just my personal experience with it. I'm not saying this is everybody. I think being able to brand, you know, to make sure that you're, you know, promoting your athleticism as best as you can over the course of your formative years, it's going to bode well for you as you get older. And it might not be baseball that you stick with, but I guarantee you pick up more, you know, you pick up some athleticism in baseball that you can use in hoops and basketball or hoops and football, you know, things like that. So I think that it's important to be able to, you know, stick with it for as long as you possibly can. And when it, you know, I said this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, like, when it becomes natural for you to kind of start to specialize, then you make that jump.
100%. I can't understate the value of it. And I know you're on the same lines of thinking as far as this goes. Then there's the weight room portion, right? And I am not an expert in terms of the timing of this. Eighth grade going into freshman year, that freshman year is probably when you need to start to commit yourself to some sort of weight room activity, right? And I will defer to the experts on the timing of this and how it should work. I know for years there's been back and forth on how early kids should start in the weight room. But even slow steps, just understanding how to move weight properly, focusing on speed and explosiveness and starting to work on your physicality as you get into those eighth or ninth grade years, I think that'll pay dividends in the long run. And we talk about it all the time. We talk about it with the guys that we work with, especially guys who are on the younger side, that a big separator in this game, like we just talked about athleticism, the other big separator is just physicality. And physicality isn't always how tall you are, but a lot of it is just strength, right? Baseball is a unique game where your height doesn't really determine your success, but your strength certainly does. Can you move fast? Can you move quick? Can you generate bat speed? Can you throw with arm speed? That's trainable stuff, and it can make a big difference in the weight room. So I think at least getting an introduction to the weight room with somebody who's a professional who can teach your son or daughter how to move properly, how to lift correctly, get them in a space where they enjoy doing that. Because for most kids, that's the biggest gap they have to fill, is most kids just simply aren't physical enough to play at the level that they want to play at or they think they should play at. And if you can start to chip away at that deficiency as you get into high school, I think you put yourself in a much better position as a 15 or 16 or 17 year old, because you've already got the foundation. You know how to do all the basic lifts. You understand what a good weight room session looks like. Like, you're starting to learn how to do things outside of the baseball world that are really important for your development. So I don't know if seventh grade is the time to start to introduce that, but I certainly think as you start to inch towards high school or begin your high school career, that that is a big piece of the puzzle that you would be, you'd be putting yourself in a good position to get familiar what it's like to get in the weight room and get after it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the, according to the Mayo Clinic on the interwebs here, kids can start strength training as young as 7 or 8. Now, that does not mean that you are, you know, in there weightlifting and powerlifting and deadlifting. You know, but I do think that it's one of the biggest gaps that kids need to close when they're leaving high school and getting to college. You know, and I think it stands to reason that if you can get yourself into the weight room and do things, you know, at a younger age, starting around high school, and, you know, maybe even younger, if you have someone who is an expert and far more advanced at what it is that you need to do in the weight room than we are, you know, I think it can bode well for you moving forward, not only in the game, but, you know, I think just in general, in your general mood and your ability to be able to handle some, you know, certain things. And, you know, it's been proven that, you know, being able to move your body and exercise can, you know, help with anxiety and depression and a lot of other things. And, you know, I think it also goes hand in hand with confidence. Like, you're in a weird age at 13, 14, 15. If you get in the weight room and, you know, you start gaining a little bit more confidence, like, those things start to carry over into other areas of your life. And I think that it's important for younger kids, you know, to be able to get in there and do that stuff. And then it's going to close that gap down as you get older and, you know, transition into college and go play college baseball, where you don't have to close that gap on guys that have already been doing it for 4, 5, 6 years. You know, you've been doing it for 4 years too. So now you're a lot further along than you would have been had you not. And now you get into college and you get a little bit more specific on what you're doing. You can get a little bit bigger, stronger, faster. And that gap is closed and you can start playing a lot more. And you can handle the rigors of what a college season is going to be.
And we all know that college season, when you first get there, is quite a shock to the old system.
Right. Well, I mean, think about it. Even when you and I played, like, that first fall, like, I mean, I remember, like, I felt like I was, you know, at the end of each week, I was like, my goodness, what did I just go through? Like, and I was in fairly good shape. You know, I lifted a little bit more, especially back in the day, than I did, you know, than probably most kids did. So in high school, you know, so I, like, getting through that first fall, like, it was eye opening for me of like, wow, I need to, like, this is tough. You know, in that first spring, I mean, we had two catchers. Like, I lost a lot of weight that year. But, you know, it really opened my eyes moving forward to what it is that I needed to do. In order to make sure that I was in shape to be able to handle what it was that I was going to handle as a catcher at the college level.
Yeah. I mean, you're practicing 6 days a week, and practice days are always more grueling than game days. Might not be as long in terms of the time that you're on the field, but it's more intense. Your body breaks down. And if you, to your point, like, if you start that process of getting in the weight room a little bit earlier, like, you're going to be more ready for what you're going to be more ready to get recruited, but you're also going to be more ready to make the transition when you actually get to college. And I mean, I know we're talking about, like, super young kids, but, you know, one of the things that we preach is you got to play the long game in this process, and you got to make sure that you have a consistent eye on the development piece, which kind of takes us back to the beginning here, which is make sure your kid enjoys it. Make sure that they are getting better. Make sure you put them around some people that care about their development more than they care about whether they won some meaningless tournament on some random field that no coaches were at. Like, you want to surround them with good people. And I mean, I guess the other thing that I probably have to mention is, parents, you really got to look yourself in the mirror, and you got to make sure that this journey is a journey that your kid wants to take, and it's not you living vicariously through your kid, because it never turns out well. Like, support your kid, love them. You should absolutely be 100% engaged. You should be fired up when they do really well. It doesn't mean that you're not enthusiastic about them playing baseball, but it can't be about you. It's got to be about your kid. And I think sometimes those wires can get crossed. And I think it's important for parents to take a step back and, like, your kid has to want this. It has to be their desire. And for some seventh and eighth grade kids, like, they may not even be thinking about college baseball, and that's cool. That's totally fine. It may take them a couple years to go, you know what? I really like this and I want to try to pursue it. But just make sure it's the kid that's driving the ship and that you're navigating and not the other way around. I just think it works out better that way when the kid is fully in and it's not the parents who are dictating what the path forward is. So,
yeah, I mean, there's a difference between encouraging and driving the ship. I think that there's a distinct difference there where, like, you know, you could be encouraging in what it is that, you know, you want your son or daughter to do. And there's a big difference between, you know, encouraging that, you know, type of action, behavior, things of that nature to help aid in being recruited. And then just, like, straight up being like, this is what we're doing. And I say this, and this is why. So this many times before, like, I never wrote mom or dad's name in the lineup card. Like, we're not recruiting you. You're not playing for me. It's your son that will be. So, you know, I think that can't be talked about enough and kind of shown the light, because I think that that's something that does happen quite a bit. You know, and look, I'll be completely blunt. Like, when dad is the one that's emailing me all the time when I was coaching, like, I wasn't really recruiting the kid. There's giant red flags there, you know, and it's always under the guise of, like, well, super busy. I had trumpet practice and baseball practice and pitching and hitting and infield and, you know, just doesn't have time. It's like, well, you know, college can get a little hectic too. Like, you're managing a social life. You have to go to class. You have baseball. There's a lot of, you have to lift, eat, do laundry. There's a lot of stuff you have to do. If you can't handle it and communicate, then I don't know how successful you're going to be in my program, because it's predicated on you being able to communicate and show up to practice all the time. You know, and if you can't communicate things, like, then, you know, that, you know, every, you hear everyone talk about this is, you know, the being able to communicate in the recruiting process and build relationships and do these things. You know, no one wants to build, like, I don't want to say no one wants to build a relationship with the parents, because that's false. Like, you want to make sure that you're bringing in kids with good families and good parents. But, like, again, I'm not recruiting the parents, I'm recruiting the kids. So, like, I need the kid to be able to reach out and send emails and build a rapport with me so that I have an idea of whether or not he's going to fit into the program. And I can promise you that if the kid's not going to reach out and it's just dad telling me that, you know, he's got so much going on, like, we're not going to build that rapport. I'm just going to tell you flat out, he's not going to fit into my program. So, you know, I think those are things that you have to legitimately think about and look yourself in the mirror and be like, okay, this is what I need to do in order to help my son. And if it means you have to take the wheel on everything, then maybe it's not in the cards moving forward.
Well said. Well said. Anything else you would like to add to this particular topic, Coach?
You know, I I think the biggest thing, aside from, you know, what we've talked about, maybe not the biggest thing, but the one thing, like the elephant in the room when it comes to younger kids and development and where we're at in the recruiting process and the recruiting calendar and all those types of things, is that, you know, you don't need to go spend an astronomical amount of money to go do a lot of this stuff. But I do think that you should try to seek out some people that have, you know, are good at what they do and see how they can help your son or daughter get better. But I think sometimes, like I talked about earlier, like, you know, get into an organization where they value development, like legit value development, ask questions about it. I think that those are things that you want to make sure that if you're going to spend a lot of money doing this stuff, that your son or daughter is getting the most out of their experience in that program. And that you don't have to go to 8,000 different people to, you know, I have three coaches in my summer team, and then I have a hitting coach, and then I have a pitching coach, and I have an infield coach. Like, it should kind of be centralized. If you're going to pay that amount of money, like, you should be getting your bang for your buck doing that stuff. So I think it's something that's worth talking about and bringing up, and maybe we do a longer podcast on stuff like that later. But I do think that that part of summer baseball has kind of become, you know, a little, it's gotten away from the development aspect and just straight up trying to play as many games as possible. And, you know, maybe you don't play nearly as much, but you practice a little bit more and you get a lot better at baseball, which then bodes well for you actually getting recruited and being recruitable. So I think things like that are some of the things that you want to consider, especially at a younger age, while you're, you know, when your kid's in seventh or eighth grade, getting into high school, you know, and then obviously the other one, I don't want to understand enough, but, you know, get in the weight room and start working out. Bodes well for confidence, all those types of things that can help you in your life and also in the game. Really, any sport you play.
Well said. Well said. Well, I think with that, we can probably close out this topic. Have fun. Try to get better. Try to surround your kid with the right type of people. Make sure the academics are at the forefront, specifically in the early stages here. And if you can't, get them in the weight room. It's good for everything. And don't be scared to play multiple sports. It's fun and it's good for you.
It'll get you to the Hall of Fame at your high school.
God damn right. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Tune into us next week for more insights into college baseball and the recruiting process. We will talk to you then. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for listening this week. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and smash that like button for us. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMDBaseball. If you want to find out what me and Keith do to help families and players navigate the recruiting process, go ahead and check us out on emdbaseball.com. Take a few minutes to check out our new online academy. I promise you'll get some good information out of that. Thanks again for listening. Check in with you next week.